Okay, today is Tuesday, October 29th, the 30th of Tishrei, Lama Tishrei, Rosh Chodesh Cheshvan, which is awesome because if we have time, we're going to preview a little bit of Chanukah connection. I don't understand it all. It's very Kabbalistic, but I had to include it. Okay, so we are going to be doing Pasukim Aleph through Yud Bet of Perek Yud Dalet, which is about one-third of the Perek, but it was a good breaking spot. There is so much written about, like, there's so much commentary and so much discrepancies and disagreements. So, Joel, you're going to find a lot of stuff in there that I just don't even know if there's time. So if you're interested in alternative versions of how to understand this story, you are welcome to look into the Art Scroll. So if you find anything especially juicy, you can mention it. But basically, there's a ton, and it's just this one little chapter, and it's in the middle of the whole Avshalom story, and it's really crazy how much ink is dedicated to this wise woman of Tekoa. So, and there's, it, and not to be confused with another wise woman that we're going to meet, I think it's Perek Kaf. Hi, we just started. So it's Perek Kaf, where it's a different wise woman that convinces Yoav not to kill a whole bunch of people. And that wise woman, who we'll get to, is, according to the rabbis, the last appearance of Serach bat Asher, whose first appearance is of the 70 souls who went into Egypt. So don't get confused. I got a little confused. It's not the same woman. There are two wise women. There's, thank God, there's a lot of wise women in Tanakh, in our tradition. Okay, so, Vayada Yoav ben Tzruya, Kilev HaMelech al Avshalom. So I think we'll read the whole paragraph and translate and go back. But you'll see, like, there's a lot of ways to understand this. So here you see in the translation, Yoav the son of Tzruya knew that the king's heart, in parentheses, longed for Avshalom. But really, we don't know that that's what it means. His heart is somehow on Avshalom. And we don't know what that means. Okay. But Vayishlach Yoav Tekoa, Vayikach Misham Isha Chachama, ויאמר אליה, התאבלי נא ולבשי נא בגדי אבל, ואל תסוכי שמן, והיית כאישה זה ימים רבים מתאבלת על מת. So Yoav sent to Tekoa, and he took from there a wise woman. Now, the way it's worded is that Tekoa is the place where you get wise people. That you, like, you just go there and you grab a wise person, and he grabbed this wise woman. It doesn't, it's, the grammar is not such that it seems like it was a specific wise woman in Tekoa. It was just a wise woman. And he said to her, now mourn, the na here, Malbim will say it means now, and wear mourning clothing, and don't anoint with oil, and you will be like this woman who's been mourning for several days on a dead person. Now, there is a ton of material here on the halachos of Avelut that we learn here based on what she's wearing and that she's not anointing, and it's quoted all over in the Gemara in Masechet Moed Katan that deals with mourning. But we're not going to get into that at all, just so you know that they actually learn things out from here. Uvat el hamelech v'dibar alav kadavar hazeh. And you should go to the king and you should speak to him on this thing. V'yasem Yoav eta devarim befiha. And Yoav placed the words in her mouth. That's also going to be interpreted in varying ways of what exactly he put in her mouth. V'tomer yisha ha-tko'it al ha-melech v'tipol al apeha arza v'tishtachavu v'tomer hoshia ha-melech. So this is weird grammar that, of course, the Malvim is going to comment on. The women of Tekoa said to the king, no dialogue, and she fell on her face to the ground and she bowed. And v'tishtachu is actually, all of the different words that we have for bowing are very technical terms for bowing. So we're all familiar, since we just ended the chagim, of v'anachnu kor'im in the aleinu, and likroa is actually to get on your knees. Today we symbolically bend our knees for it. And mishtachavim, which is tishtachu, this verb here, actually means spread eagle on the ground, which we don't even do. We have, if you're in between the little pews, you know, you barely have room for anything. But that's really what it's meant to be. It's meant to be spread eagle. And this is a miracle that it talks about in the Beis Mikdash, that there was room, even when it was crowded, for everyone to still do the spread eagle bow. There's another Bhavkita, which is like a pike position, touching your toes. So all of these different bows actually present different positions when our avoda, our davening, was more physical. And then Vatomer, and then she says again, and here she says, Hoshia Hamelch, let the king save. Save, O king. Okay, so that's the first paragraph, and this is how we're introduced to the wise women of Tekoa. So let's read some of the commentary on it. Okay. So here's from the Gemara, Masechet Menachot. Veishlach Yoav Tekoa ve'yakam isham isha chachma. So Yoav sent to Tekoa, and he took from there a wise woman. Maishna Tekoa, why was it specifically Tekoa? Amar v'yochanan mitoch shevigilin v'shemen zayit, chochma mitzuya behen. Since they had ate a nice Mediterranean diet, they had a lot of olive oil, there was a lot of wisdom there. So it's giving you dietary advice to eat a lot of olive oil. Okay, and this is going to be the basis for some of the other things that we read. So the Maharasha, who we've spoken about before, he's the only rabbi in the Gemara, he's in the back of the book, who systematically interprets the Agadita parts of the Gemara. So all the other rabbis might happen to interpret an Agadita if they found it interesting, but really they're focused on the Halacha. But the Maharasha has a whole Sefer Chidushei Agadot. He also has a Sefer Chidushei Halachot. So he's the only one in the Gemara where you can really depend on him to find interpretations of the Agadita. So he's quoting this Gemara, and he says, "Demi lashon ha-mikra mashma delo yada Yoav mi'isha zo b'tekoa." Because from the language of the psukim, it doesn't seem that Yoav was interested in a specific woman in Tekoa. De imlokin havle lomar ve'ishlach Yoav li'isha ha-chachama l'tekoa. It would have had more specific language there. It would have said the wise woman, but it didn't. L'chach kamar mashkatuv chulei v'kaimlan. And that's why it says you could just send to Tekoa and find a wise person. Okay, the Marit Ha'ain. Oh, I forgot to look him up. Oh, this is like a special gift for all of you and for me, is that I upgraded my Bar Ilan CD from 22 to 27. So now I have even more sources to choose from. So I don't know who this Marit Ha'ain is, and I apologize for not remembering. I'm sure I looked at the bio and I just don't remember. Okay, so he quotes the same Gemara. And if you go to the bottom of it, where it's three lines up from the bottom, the fifth word, Vashalach Misham Isha Chachma, Dafila Bitakoa, so even in Tekoa, Shikulam Chachma, Mitsuya Bahem, that everybody is wise there. Isha Zot Haita Mitsuyanet. This woman was especially wise. Vikarin La Chachma, and she's called wise. Ulhachi Kati Vishlach Yoav Tekoa Ir Ha Chachma, Vikach Misham Isha Chachma, Vinimsa Shihim Yuchadet Bechachmata. And so in the city of wise people, this woman was exceptionally wise. Viruya ledaber al hamelech, and she was suitable to speak to the king. B'mashal u'b'militza, isha matza lehalel nirtza. So she could speak to the king in parables and in metaphors, and she could praise and she could like find the peace here. Okay, chavruta. I think this is a Talmud aid. It's another new source in the Bar Ilan USB. Hi. Okay, you guys will have to share. Oh, and are there chairs?
There's one chair over there.
Yeah, and there's another chair over there. Oh. Resume. Okay, so we're just talking about the wise women of Tekoa, and we're seeing all these sources that say that Tekoa was known as a place with wise people because they had a lot of olive oil. And this woman that was sent, that Yoav, remember Yoav is like David's right-hand man, he's also his nephew. He's the son of Tsruya, which is one of David's sisters, okay? And he's a general. And we just read the first few psukim, if you want to read them in English. So Yoav wants to do something about this situation that David's son Avshalom, who killed Amnon, who raped Avshalom's full biological sister Tamar, has exiled himself to his mother's land, Geshur, and Yoav sees that David, we haven't figured out if David still holds hatred towards his son Avshalom, or if David really feels positively towards his son Avshalom, and Yoav is trying to facilitate through this wise woman of Tekoa to bring him back, Avshalom, to Eretz Yisrael. Okay, so this, so on page 2, the Chavruta, which is a new source in the Bar Ilan USB, which I think is just like an aid for learning Talmud. So he says explicitly, Ki shemen zayit mefakeach et alev. When you eat olive oil, it opens up your heart. And heart could be understood as brain also. So something about olive oil makes us smart. Okay, so now just a little bit more on Tekoa and olive oil. So this is from Parshat Vayechi. I should have put the English, sorry. And this is all the brachot that Yaakov gave to all of his sons. Me Asher Shmeina Lachmo. So from Asher, his bread is oiled. Vehu yitein ma'adanei melech, and he will give sweets or delicacies of the king. So the Tzor Hamor, which I think is a Kabbalistic commentary on the Torah, l'fishayu b'nei Asher regilim b'shemen, because the children of Asher were used to shemen, or they had a habit of eating oil, hayu chachamim harbei mehashemen. Shehashemen mefakeach et alev. They were very wise because the shemen opens up. Mefakeach, it's a different kind of opening. So when we say every morning in the bracha, we think Hashem pokeach inayim, for opening up our eyes. So it's not so much as seeing, but what's another word? Understanding, but there's a better word. Like how we see and also discern, right? So it's a... okay. V'lechach halach Yoav l'tekoah. So here the Torah Hamer, the commentary on the Chumash, is in his commentary on Asher, having oil, says, and that's why Yoav went to Tekoa. Shenemar v'yishlach Yoav Tekoa v'yikach misham yishach chachma v'tekoa b'nachlat Asher haya. And therefore they deduce that the land of Tekoa, the city of Tekoa, was in the land apportioned to Asher. Okay? So Asher is given this bracha of oil, and they eat olive oil in Tekoa, and they're wise, and that's why it's part of Asher. Okay. So that was all on the Gemara. Abarbanel. So Abarbanel has a lot of questions that he says, and the Malbim, which we focus on a lot, actually models his commentary on the Abarbanel, but the Malbim's questions are much shorter. You can see on the Abarbanel it says, Hasha'elah ha-revi'it, the fourth question, and it's a paragraph. So there's a big joke that if you read the Abarbanel, you can become an apikoros, you can become irreligious, because you read all the questions, and they're so long that you never get to the answers. Okay, Abarbanel lived in 15th century Spain. He was the finance minister to King Ferdinand and Queen Isabella, and they offered him asylum, and he chose, rather than staying in Spain, to be exiled with his people. Okay, so he's really cool. So his fourth question is, why did Yoav go through this big effort to bring this woman to speak to the king? Why didn't he just speak to him himself? They have this great relationship, right? Why didn't Yoav just speak straight to King David instead of all of these riddles and parables? We haven't even heard the wise woman of Tekoa's parable yet. It would have been completely suitable for him to say to the king that he should return Avshalom and gather his nidacho, is his outcast one. V'hanidachim me'aretz Mitzrayim, if you know that from Yeshaya. Okay, kol shekein, she'amar ha'ketuv rishona v'techal David ha'melech latzit al Avshalom ki nicham al Amnon ki meit v'yada Yoav ki ben Tzruya. Okay, so we learned at the end of the last parak, where it told us explicitly that David had been comforted, that he wanted to go out to get Avshalom because he'd been comforted on the death of Amnon that he died, meaning his mourning period on Amnon didn't last so long. And we discussed there about how he probably knew Amnon was a bad guy, and it was better, you know, he may have had some relief in Amnon's death, given what Amnon had done to Tamar. Okay, so Abarbanel here is clearly asking a question based on the fact, as we translate, as the translation here said, that David was longing for Avshalom, that there was positive feelings there. V'im David kvar haya bilibo lehavi et Avshalom, and if David already had in his heart to bring Avshalom back, elav, lama lo diber Yoav b'davar v'hevi et ha'isha? Why didn't Yoav speak directly, and why did he bring the woman? So here's where he answers it. V'saper ha'katuv she'im hayot she'David mana atzmo o mana davidav mitzet achrei Avshalom. So it seems to be, based on the psukim, that David himself withheld himself and his servants from going after Avshalom. There was no attempt to chase after and bring him back. Hine im kol ze yada Yoav ben Tzruya ki lev hamelech al Avshalom. But despite that, Yoav still knew that the king's heart was on Avshalom. Ratzon lomar sheya libo lehina kem mimenu im hayot shelo yatzai lev. So meaning the fact that he withheld from going to get him or sending anyone to get him must mean that David did have in his heart to seek some sort of revenge against Avshalom, that it wasn't all that he just longed for him, as the translation would have you think. And since Yoav knew that David still harbored this hatred against Avshalom to seek revenge from him, so Yoav then realized it was necessary to request this wise woman to come and do all of these machinations.
Why bother?
Because Yoav understands how conflicted David is. So he can't just speak to him straight. He has to find a way to convince him through.
Could have blown up in Yoav's face.
For sure. So we see what a conflicted person Yoav is. We see he's a principled person, but on the other hand, he also is a man of emotions, and he's killed a number of people in his own life.
Now that begs an issue. Maybe it was he wanted Avshalom back, because then David would have more forgive Yoav, especially for the issue with Avner.
Exactly. And that you read that in there?
Yeah.
Yeah, because so Yoav killed Avner because Avner killed Yoav's brother. So Yoav is in this weird place where he can probably identify with Avshalom for killing his brother, for raping his sister, because of all these family things. So that's why Yoav also might not feel that he's the appropriate person to present the case, since he's his own guilt holds in a similar situation. Good. Okay. Okay. Vilulesha de Yoav sin atavid adain libno. And if it hadn't been for Yoav knowing that David still harbored some hatred towards his son, he even says, we're going to see later in the parak, that when Avshalom does indeed come back, David has no interest in seeing him. He says, go to your home, we're not going to see my face. Which is actually kind of, it's similar to language to what Paro uses with Moshe, which is kind of sad. Haya Yoav medaber ze elav panim bepanim. Then Yoav would have spoken to him face to face if he didn't know about all this hatred he still harbored. Aval nimna miza bikesha teisha tiko'it mipnei sinato shaita dain tiku'a belibo. I thought this was really cool language. Mm-hmm. So he withheld from this, from Yoav himself speaking, and he asked the tiko'ite woman, because the hatred was still tiku'a, entrenched in his heart. So Tekoa is the name of the place. Tekoa, entrenched in his heart. V'hutra imza hashela rivit. And here we have solved the fourth question. Okay? Continuing on, Mitzuda David. So most of this is going to be Malvim. So anytime I used somebody else, I labeled him and then I relabeled Malvim. You'll see. Okay. So Vayada Yoav. Hekir b'hamelech asher libo tov al Avshalom. So Mitzuda David is just one of the few examples where he explicitly interprets that Yoav knew that the king's heart was good with Avshalom, meaning it was time to bring Avshalom back. But then that would bring up the question, why go through all these machinations if it would be so easy? Okay, Malvim. Achar she'yada Yoav shelev hamelech tov al Avshalom, if Yoav really knew that David's heart was good with Avshalom, like most of the Mefarshim say, like the Mitzudat David, lama lo bikesh v'atzmo? Why didn't he just ask himself? Ve'yada Yoav, hagam shekala milirid fo. since they stopped chasing him, because Yoav she'adayin leiv hamelech al Avshalom. In all this, Yoav knew that the king's heart was still with Avshalom. Ratzon lamar she'notar lav eva. So he's holding like his role model, the Abarvinel, that he guarded on him hatred. V'lachin lo arav libo levakesh ba'atzmo ba'ado. And that's why Yoav didn't want to ask himself. V'hu tzrach letach bola she'yazkir. And he had these machinations. And it's probably because of what we said about his own sordid past with killing out of revenge for his own brother. Okay, Vayishlach Tekoa. He sent Tekoa. Perish Mahari, that's the Abarbanel. Mipnesha Tekoa Haita Behar. So Tekoa was on a mountain. And we have a proof from Yirmiyahu. And we're just going to skip down to the next line. V'chazal Amru. The Gemara that we learned. Mipnesha Shemen Zayit Gadal Sham. Hachokma Mitzuya Sham. Since they have a lot of olive oil, they grow a lot of olive trees, the wisdom is found there. Hit abli na. Milat na more ahatkifut. So na can mean either please or now, can also mean raw, which is interesting. But so the Malvim is saying, how I translate it when we read through it, that it here it means now. So mourn now. So and he the immediateness, the Malvim says that it talks about. So Yoav commanded her to immediately start mourning, bebechi umaspeid, with crying and eulogies, vilubosh bigde aval ubal tasoch, and to wear mourning clothing and not to anoint herself, ube'er hatam shetatzchil ba'avilut tachef. And the explanation of why he wanted her to start mourning immediately, because then you would be like a woman who has been mourning for several days. And therefore, if you immediately enter into the king's orbit, so to speak, as a mourning woman, you start now, then nobody will know that you're just wearing a costume and that you changed who you were for this. So that's why he says now. So what does it mean that Yoav put the words in her mouth? And again, I apologize, we haven't seen it yet, but Yoav's going to give her the parable and the actual events, what she's speaking about. He also put the details in her mouth. Because Yoav was able to estimate what the king would say. He was able to predict what the king would say, how he would respond.
Of course, that asks the question, then why do you need a wise woman?
Right, but we're going to see the Radak disagrees on that. Vilamda mashitashiv hi al devarav, and therefore he taught her what she would say on his words. Ukmosh echtov beperk yata. So it could be sometimes wise. Maybe she was just really good at memorizing her lines to a certain extent.
She also, as you mentioned, would have been well known, and therefore she could put up a better front.
Okay, good. Okay, so the Radak totally disagrees with the Malbim's evaluation of it. Evaluate, that was the word I wanted to use for how Yoav would be able to evaluate what he would say. Vayasim et devarim b'piha, he placed the words in her mouth. Amru imhu seder et hamashal b'fia, mahe atzrich li'isha chokma. So exactly Joel's question. If he put the whole thing in her mouth, why did he need a wise woman? L'fisha teda lehashib b'chokma, l'masha amar la hamelech. Because she would be able to respond appropriately with whatever the king would say to her. Because Yoav had no way of knowing what the king would respond. The Radak is saying you can even say that Yoav just gave her the facts and she made up the whole mashal on her own. Okay, so we have different opinions as to what her wisdom was used for. Okay, back to the Malvim. Masha katav vatomer, vatomer shnei pamim. So it said vatomer, and she said, and then she actually didn't say anything. She fell on her face. And then it said vatomer, and she said, save, O king. Vatomer v'chulei vatipol v'chulei vatomer. She said, and then she fell, and then she said. Vatom lomar sh'teka v'boa tz'aka hoshi amach. So what it's saying is that immediately when she came in, she screamed out, save, O King. And then she fell on her face. And then she said again, save, O King. And she came in saving it, saying it immediately so that the servants of the king wouldn't push her out. And so that they would know that she had something very important. Okay, so back to our text now. So pasuk hey, Bayomer lahamelech malach, vatomer av ava isha almana ani vayamot ishi. So David said to her, "What do you have?" And she said, "I am a woman who is a widow, and my husband is dead."
That's redundant.
Yes. Because if she's a widow, obviously her husband's dead. We'll see all the commentaries. Leshif chatcha shnei banim, and to your maidservant has two sons. Vayinatsu shnehem besadeh, and they fought in a field. Who does this remind you of? Two brothers fighting in a field. Yeah, last week's parsha, Cain and Hevel. I'm sure there are deeper meanings, and nobody really mentions it here. But some of the people I listened to did mention it, but they didn't really have any deep understandings about it. Ve'en matzil b'nehem. There was nobody there to save them. Actually, a deep meaning could be, we're going to see that this is why Cain was able to go on living, despite the fact that he killed his brother. So we'll see that in the explanation. So there was nobody to save them. Ve'yako ha'echad et ha'echad. So this is a weird grammatical thing. So ve'yako is, and he hit him, the one at to the one. You see how that's redundant? It should have been, and he hit the one at to the one, or the second, it could be, which would be more normal. It's tomorrow's whispering. But instead, and he hit him, the one to the one. Okay? Vayametoto, and he killed him. V'hine kama kol ha'mishpacha l'shivchatecha, and the entire family has risen against your maidservant. Vayomru, tni et make achiv, v'nimtehu v'nefesh achiv asher harag. So the rest of the family is suggesting that she give over her surviving son so that they can kill him for the sake of the soul of the dead brother. V'nashmira gam et hayoresh, and we will then destroy whatever's left to inherit from their father. V'kibu et gachalti, and they're going to extinguish my last remaining flame or coal, the last coal, asher nishara levilti sim le'ishi shem usharit al pnei adama, without leaving me any remainder of my husband for his name and for a remainder on the face of the earth. Okay, so just to get the facts straight, what she's insinuating is that, so normally the family members are entitled to kill the killer of their family member. That's a goel nefesh, and why we have the Arei Miklat, the cities of sanctuary, the sanctuary cities.
Well, you're assuming he's not guilty of murder as a capital punishment, because
right,
not two witnesses.
Right, that's what we're going to say. That's what the Malvin is going to tell us. So, but the family, from the family's perspective, they're seeing this as a great opportunity for, say it's her dead husband's brother, okay, his family. So they're seeing this as an opportunity to legally, for them to inherit all of his stuff instead of his remaining son to inherit. So that's how they're seeing this opportunity. She's describing them as in opportunistic terms. Okay, so let's see the commentary. So the Malvim. So on Pasuk Hey. So Milat Aval Shaloki Mishpato. So this word Aval is very strange. Lama Kafal Yishal Mana Ani Veyam. So why does she use the redundancy of I'm a widow and my husband died? Malach, the king says, what's happening to you? B'zeh nichlal gam ha'sheila madua bat hi v'lo bala o kroveha o baneha. So he's interpreting when David HaMelech said, Malach, what is it to you? Meaning you're a woman here coming to my court, which is unusual. So here she's answering in all this double language, why it wasn't her husband or her relative or her son. Ki ein derech nashim lavo lemishpat, because it's not the way of women to come to the courts. Ve'al zeh hishiva, and here she responds, aval, she'i afshar she'avo ba'ala ki hi amana. It's impossible that her husband could come because she's a widow. Ve'lo baneha, and not her sons, shehu nidach mimekomo, because he's been exiled from his place. Ve'lo mishpachta, and not her family, she'aleihem titzak, because she's going to scream about him, about them, sorry. Isha amanani ve'yamat ishi, I'm a widow and my husband's died. V'halashan moreh, this is very interesting, she'kfar mitu lashne anashim. Two husbands have died. Be'ofen shamazla ra ki mazal gorem. And it's her bad luck, and it's her luck causing it. Be'en la tikva liot ish ve'leholid banim ki hi katlanit. And she has no hope to have another husband and to have more children because she is a destroyer. So meaning it's actually not redundant. I was already a widow, and now my latest husband has also died. Okay? So she's like a black widow. She's terming herself. So she has no recourse. She can't bring her sons. Her family is out to get her. And she herself had to come. Okay. So now, Malvim, Vayako et Echad. So this redundant. And he killed him, the one. Kafal hakinui imhapol shelo kedat. This is doubled in a way that's really not according to the grammatical laws. Vayinatsu. So this is what Joel is referring to. She gives three claims why her son should not be obligated in death even though he killed his brother. The first one, shenatzu b'sadeh. This happened in a field. V'lo haya sham edim v'hatra. And there were no witnesses and there was no warning. Bet, v'ein matzil b'nehem. There's no way to save them. And this is very interesting. Be'ofen she'ilu haya matzil. If there had been somebody to save them, lo higia lidei kach, it never would have come to this. Ki haya karov l'shogeg, meaning, she's saying, this makes it somewhat accidental. What do we call this? Manslaughter. What?
Manslaughter.
Right. But what's the legal term for somebody who kills out of passion? Like second degree. Right? It's second degree murder instead of first degree? I'm looking at you because you're the lawyer. Beritichata af. The boiling over of the nose, which is an expression for extreme anger, the hachama and the heat, another anger, ba'in mifasher be'ein mifasher berivam, without any kind of makes it that there would be no compromise in the argument. Okay, so she's saying it turns it from first degree murder, I think, to second degree murder. Ruth, do you have any as a lawyer?
Yeah, no, I think that's what you're saying. Okay. I think the Arai Miklat is only for Bashoga, isn't it?
Right. Yeah. Yeah, the Arai Miklat is for everybody until the deen comes through to decide what the judgment actually is. Okay, so that's how. So those are the three reasons why he's not obligated in the death penalty. Okay? There was no warning and no witnesses. There was.
But the term isn't witnesses. It's not Hayden. It's something else. It seems like she's implying that David's to blame for the death.
Right.
That he didn't come in between the two of them.
Right. So that's going to be the third one that he gives. So those are the two. So no witnesses and no warning and nobody to extinguish the fire. So therefore it goes from first degree to second degree. And Gimel is based on this weird grammar thing. Vayako ha'echad et ha'echad vayametoto. Ma shekafal ha'kinui im ha'poal moreh she'perusho ki'ilu ha'pa'al kafuol. Vayako, so he's giving very grammatical terms. So now he's a vayako vayach ha'echad. He killed the one. And it's similar to in Shmot Perek Bet, Vatar Ehu et ha'yalid. This is when the daughter of Paro gets the basket that Moshe Rabbeinu is in. And it says, she saw him, the boy. You see, it's the same. So how do the rabbis explain it? Shera'ata shchina imo. She saw the shchina with it. So she saw the shchina with... So et is an interesting word. Et usually means direct object. Okay? That's usually all that it means. But every once in a while, it can mean with. So here, she saw him, the shchina, even though that's feminine, it's okay, with the boy. Okay? So, and... So now he's going to read this into it. Shepirishu v'tarehu et hashchina v'tarei tayalad. He saw both of them. V'zitzon omar, shezeh hika lezeh, v'zeh hika lezeh, ha'v'ha'chad hemit, be'ofen shechavero haya ke rodef, ki haykahu gamkin. So, actually, this isn't what you were saying, Joel, but I know what you're saying. Well, if I don't say it, you please say it. So, meaning, he hit him, and he hit him. They were hitting each other. So they were in a physical fight. Each one's life was at stake in this physical fight. So therefore, he had a right, one, to kill the other, because he's like a rodef. He's like someone pursuing him to die.
Which, according to this, would assume that, which is he's saying, is that Avshalom had the right to kill Amnon.
Right, exactly. That's going to be the nimshal. That's going to be the actual events of the parable story. So when Avshalom killed Avner, it was as if Avner was trying to kill Avshalom in that he raped his sister.
Not Avner.
Yeah. Amnon. Thank you. Amnon. So many Aleph names. I don't even know if they're all Alephs. Okay. So those are the three reasons. Begimel Devarim Elahem Gam Ben Nimshal. So now, right, now he's going to explain all the actual events. She'Avshalom harag la'Amnon below Edim ve'hatra'a. Avshalom killed Amnon without any witnesses and without any warning. V'shelo haya matzil b'nehem, and this is the trigger to David HaMelech that you were hinting at. There was no savior between them to quell this anger. She'im haya David osa mishpat la'Amnon, al she'ina et achoto, lo haya bali dekach. That if David had exerted justice onto Amnon, that he raped his sister, it wouldn't have come to this. So that's like the clincher in there that she's hiding in this mashal, in this parable. And that's really probably what gets to David. And Amnon, it's as if he was striking out at Avshalom in that he raped his sister and embarrassed and shamed his sister. And this is also close to what the Abarbanel said, but Malbim is able to do it in many fewer words. Okay, so now the Baal HaTurim. So I just thought this was interesting. So Baal HaTurim is the tour. And so he says Vayinatsu, that there are two people who were Vayinatsu, who strove. That's usually how they translate it. Vayinatsu b'machana, Vayinatsu shnehem b'sada. So we have in Vayikra, Perek Kaftad, it's my last son's bar mitzvah parashat Emor. It's about the one who curses. And it says that the one who eventually cursed God was striving with this other men, and they were striving in the machana. Ramaz lamanda mar sheyatza chayav mi beit dino shel Moshe al sheratza li ta'ola b'machana dan. So this hints at the fact that they were in the machana, hints at the fact that they had exited from the beit din of Moshe, that this man who had an Egyptian father and a Jewish mother, he wanted to put his tent in the camp of Dan, which is where his mother was from, Shlomit Bat Divri. V'zehu v'yinatsu b'sadalis kesadeh. And those who were fighting the field, it was on the issue of the field, because as the woman makes clear, this is all an issue of inheritance, really, so the field. Okay, back to are we back to the text? No, not yet. Zayin. So Malvim in Zayin. Hashelot, Masha Ketav Nashmida, Gam Et HaYoresh. So where it says that they shall destroy the heir. So they'll destroy the heir. Halo Zot Lo Amra HaMishpacha. So this isn't what the family said. Ki Ratzu Rak Leva'er Hadam. So this is what the woman's interpretation of the machinations of the family. V'hine kama kol mishpacha, the entire family got up. V'hine lo od ta'ana rivi'it. And this is going to be her fourth reason why her son should not be killed. Ki bana harotzeach barach halachlo. So the one who murdered, he escaped. V'hamishpacha kamu aleha v'rotzim l'kaftoha shetigale mekomo ayehu. The family wants to force her to reveal where he ran off to. They want the one who killed the brother. And this is a big burden. So halachically, the family members have a right to kill the murderer of their family member, even if he hasn't had a judgment pronounced in the Beit Din yet. This is their right. They can precede the judgment. Then they're not held accountable on that. The family still doesn't have the right to force the mother to give over his hiding place. It's only if they actually catch him and kill him that they aren't culpable. They can't force anybody to help them in their quest to capture him. And this is another more of their evilness, the family. That they would destroy the heir, the inheritor. So she's explaining just the inheritance rules. So they are the brother of the father who had died, and then they would inherit if they got both the sons out of the way. And they have these bad intentions, but she's placing it in their mouth. They didn't actually say that. And so all of this is more of their evilness, because he, according to the deen, shouldn't be obligated with death. So they want to preempt the deen, where he wouldn't be obligated to death, and they want to kill him, where they would then have no culpability on his death, and they'd be able to inherit everything. And now David will understand her strife. And they would extinguish my last remaining coal. So she's lost all of these family members and she has one last lit coal that lights up the darkness, and this is her remaining son, and they want to also extinguish that and put her into complete darkness. And Labilti Shum Ishi Sham Shem Vesherit, and her husband would have no remainder. Shalide Harikat Beno Yim Cheshmo, because then his name would be erased if they killed the second son. Shalide Horashat Nechasav Lazarim Yikru Sheretova Zvuhu, and he would also all of his own belongings would go to this other family, and there'd be nothing left. Okay.
Barbanel has a little problem with this because of the fact that there's something that she has to be read into these stories.
Yeah.
For the David story, in order for this mashal to fit.
Right.
The fact that there had to be somebody benefiting if Avshalom was removed from the scene.
Right.
Which meant, one, there had to be people complaining about Avshalom wanting to get rid of him, and B, that they had to benefit if Avshalom were gotten rid of. And the Abarvanel takes that position.
Right. So, of course, there are the other brothers who then... But, again, on the other hand, everyone knows that Shlomo HaMelech is supposed to inherit. So the whole thing is, yeah, it's not a perfect mashal. Which is another reason to say that maybe the Isha Chachma made up the mashal instead of Yoav putting it in her mouth. Okay, so how does the king respond? Ve'yomer Melech El Isha, l'chi leveitech, go to your home, ve'ani etza ve'alayich, and I will... I'll deal with it. I'm just looking at how I will give orders about you. Vatomer Yishat Koit. So the woman responds, Al Hamelch, to the king, Alai Adoni Hamelch Ha'avon, on me is this inequity, Ve'al Beit Avi, and on my father's house, Ve'Hamelch V'Kiso Naki. And the king and his throne are clean from it. Okay, let's just continue reading. Vayomer Hamelch Hamedaber Alaych Veheveto Alay Velo Yosif Od Lagat Bach. So the king said, whoever speaks to you, bring him to me, and he shall no longer continue to touch you. So he's adding on to his protective services. The first response in Pasukhet was, go home, I'll take care of you. She then says this weird sentence about how all the guilt will be on her and he'll be clean. And then he continues, he adds on to it and says, anyone who speaks to you, bring him to me, and he won't touch you anymore. Meharbat goel hadam l'shachet v'lo yashmidu et bini. So then she adds on to it, I beg you, let the king remember the Lord your God, that the avenger of blood destroy not excessively, so that they destroy not my son. Vayomer chai Hashem mipol misa'arat binach arza. So he says, as the Lord lives, if one hair of your son shall fall to the earth. So you see how it keeps getting upped. He says, go home, I'll take care of your deal. And then he says, okay, whoever talks to you, I'll make sure they never talk to you again. And then he says, nothing's going to happen to your son, which was not, like, she had to keep, somehow with what she said, David upped the ante in terms of his protection. Okay. So then she asks to speak one more thing with the king, and he says, speak, and that's what we're going to get to next week. But now let's read the commentary. Okay, we have a little bit of time. Okay, so... oh, we're not going to get to it. Or maybe we're... Okay. Ma haya havikuach haza? What is this whole... argument? First he says, go to your house, and then she removes from him the sin. It's not known what she wanted from this. And then she says, again, can I speak to you? And how does it keep escalating to the point where he makes this oath that her son won't be harmed? It seems like it's just random words without any wisdom or anything. So the king says, go to your home. So these are included two questions. That she doesn't want the people to be able to kill her son even if they catch him. And also that she should not be forced to reveal where his place is, and that they can't take his inheritance from under her. So the second thing she merited by way of the halacha, that they can't do anything to her because he is not obligated in death according to the Torah. But for the first thing of protecting her son, the Torah is not with her. It's actually not just they have the authority, but it might even be a mitzvah for the family members to kill the one who murdered and hurt them. And the king can't override that. And therefore the king only wanted to appease her in what was relevant to her. And that was the issue of her being forced to reveal his hiding place and to take her property. Kvar katav harambam, and he gives the halacha, so we'll skip that. L'chi levetach v'ani atzavelach, the bigger print. V'ton lamar, en lach lira migolei hadam, hamafchidim otach, ki en yecholim lasod lach me'uma, kifi hadin. They cannot, you don't have anything to be afraid of from these people because they can't touch you according to the din. U'b'kol zeh ani atzavelach. And in all this, I will still command for you. V'ton lamar, she'achkor ayudei sarei hamelach, v'shovtav im ra'ui lahamitom idin hamachut, so he's saying, I'm going to research this for you. If indeed there's any obligation, and I'll let you know, kind of. Okay? So then, she says, on me is the iniquity. This has nothing to do with you researching out, she says. Zelo harag ish nochri. This one didn't kill a strange man. Rak et achiv, only his brother. V'galal avnon v'ashama al yoldoto v'al beit aviv lo al acharim. And therefore, the guilt will only go stay within this family and not on others. V'in v'zeh takanat olam ki mi yomad m'masav l'arog et achiv l'achti et beit aviv. So she's saying this doesn't fit into the normal blood. What's it called? What's it in English? The Gal Hadam. The blood chaser.
Avenger,
right? Because this isn't like he killed a stranger and then that strange family then seeks revenge on this family. This is all in the same family. And there's no tikkun olam, there's no fixing of the world in them seeking of revenge on this case. Okay?
Why doesn't it apply to a family? I don't talk to your father.
Because the whole sin stays within the family and you're not adding anything. There's no benefit to it because you're just getting revenge on the same people. It all goes back to the father. So you're just creating more havoc and nobody's going to learn from this situation. And in fact, Rashi says, Kinui hu lichvodo klamar atam etachel oti, you're pushing me aside. This is all like euphemistically when she says you'll be clean. She's saying that euphemistically. You're pushing me aside. You can just read the English. You're putting me off by saying I will give orders about you. Now if I go on away and you do not give orders about me, upon whom then will the iniquity be? Meaning you're not so clean in this, David HaMelech, even though that's what she said. It's all a euphemism. Okay, so then he is convinced in there. In Yud, Bayomer HaMelech, Az Nirtzel Bakashata, he's appeased to her request, Shalayach Koralav Kla, that he's not going to do any research on this, Ubeze Patarota Shalot Titchayav Lamasra, and therefore she's completely exempt from giving over his place, Veshemar Vizesh Amer Hamadaber Alech Veheveto Alai, Kiariv Rivech, I'm going to argue your argument. And therefore, he's fulfilled a request for that which is relevant to her. But he hasn't yet taken care of not allowing the family to kill the other son. We have a little bit of time. Okay. But Tomer az hosifa levakesh gam ba'adzot. She says, here, bli bal yamitu ho goal hadam. So now, she's further asking and requesting for the sake that he should warn them not to kill him, that she warn the avengers not to kill him. Even if they have the authority to do so from the Torah. The king should remember the Lord your God. She is asking that he mention in his words the name of God. Like he says, by God, lest a strand of his hair touch the ground. And with this, the avengers cannot release the oath of the king. So if the king says this boy should not die, that's the Torah way out of their authority to be able to kill him. And it explains the reason for her request, meharbat goa hadam l'shachet, because it just causes all the more destruction. She'ein ze dome l'mitzvat ha-Torah, and this is not similar to the case that the Torah laid out, she'agol yicham levavo linkom dam achiv mi'ish nochri, where they will then, that their heart is out to avenge the blood of their brother from a strange man. And it's not relevant to this case where the murderer is also the brother. Nothing will be fixed in killing him. It'll just add to more destruction. Because nobody's going to be satisfied with this. They're just going to kill the second brother. And therefore, the king should decree and say with the strength of royalty that they should not destroy my son. And therefore, this request has been fulfilled. And he indeed does use God's name. And with this, she has accomplished the purpose of her request. And with the matter of Avshalom, to request that the king return him, like we will see will come. Okay, so now, it's 10:15, right? Almost 10:15. So I just want to tell you this B'nai Yisachar, which I don't understand at all. Okay, so now we understand the first part of the woman of Tekoa and how wise she was in her parable and her demands and her escalating demands and how she was able to get all the loose ends tied up in this. Okay, so now the Vinei Saschar, the next holiday is Hanukkah. We're entering into Cheshvan. Okay. So he's going to talk about lighting candles. So why did Yoav specifically go to Tekoa and specifically take a wise woman, v'lo ish chacham, and not a wise man? V'hu davar nifla, and this is a wonderful thing. Dihine Yoav ratza az lefayas et hamelech David, shehu merkeva lemidat machut. So Yoav wanted to appease the king that it is the kingship is the chariot for the Mida of Malchut, the Kabbalistic sphere of Malchut. Okay? I don't understand any of this, so don't ask me, but it's cool. V'hine Midat Malchut hi b'chinat nukva. So that aspect of Malchut is feminine. U'kishenit malit chas v'shalom bedinim. And when the deans are fulfilled, chas v'shalom, meaning something negative is meant to happen to the Jewish people, kishenim shach la sod hashemen chokma mit matkim hadinim. You can draw forth the secret of the wise, the oil of wisdom, and that will sweeten the judgments. Hine al pi segula zo asa Yoav. And this is the segula, the omen, that Yoav did, kisharatza lefayes et hamelech, when he wanted to appease the king. Shalach lemakom hashemen, he sent to the place of oil, veikach misham isha chokma daika, and he specifically sought out a wise woman, who sod hamshachat hashemen, and this is the secret of drawing forth the oil, which represents wisdom, el hamenorah, to the menorah, which represents the kingship. Ve'el ayadei zeh, nimtakim hadinim shal hamachut. And by way of this, you can sweeten the judgments of the kingship. V'hine v'kan kishetiharu beit hamikdash, when the Beis HaMikdash was purified, v'ratza Hashem yitbarach lehodia ulevaser lehem shekavar nimtaku dinei hamelech, and Hashem wanted to announce and inform to them that the judgments of the kingship had been sweetened, azeh hizmin lehem avoda rishana hadlakat hamenorah b'shemen hatahor. That's why he invited them in the very first avoda of lighting the menorah with pure oil. And then they knew that the kingship had been sweetened. There were no longer any negative judgments, just like the segula of Yoav appeasing the king. Okay, so that's why we light the candles. When we light the candles in the menorah, we are acknowledging the sweetening of the judgments. Almost the opposite of Yom Kippur, like it's now sweet, there's no fear, there's love, and that's why it was specifically a wise woman in the feminine from Tekoa, the place of oil. So maybe we all have a lot of oil in our lives, both figuratively of sweetening the judgment and also literally of opening our minds and being healthy.